Right now, we're talking about last night's Iowa caucuses. The Iowa Democratic Party says it will release results sometime today. There were inconsistencies, they say, in reporting and they're hand-checking results. So what do you make of the situation in Iowa? Is this a harbinger of difficulties that come with new technologies? Democrats, what are your thoughts out of this delay and how are you feeling right now? We're at 800-642-1234. Liz Lenz is a columnist and opinion writer for the Gazette newspaper in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. She's participated in the Iowa caucuses before. Liz, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So we woke up this morning with no results to speak of. What do you know? What is the latest here?
Well, the latest is that we don't know anything yet. Hopefully results will come later today. But with new rules and a new app and so many candidates in the field, and with there were supposed to be three counts that we're going to come out of the caucuses. And what we're hearing from the party is that when they tallied those three counts, there were inconsistencies between the three of them. And that makes sense. Caucuses are long and complicated. People were really confused about the rules. There are reports that people were just kind of leaving their caucus once they thought they could, when that wasn't exactly true. So I'm sure that accounts for some of the inconsistencies in the numbers. It surely did in my precinct 15 in Cedar Rapids, where people left before they could fill out both sides of the presidential preference card, or a couple people tried to leave with their preference card. So and that happened at a bunch of precincts across the state as well.
So we're seeing some confusion out there. What were the three sets of data they were trying to manage here, trying to juggle?
Oh, wow. Get ready. So the first count was going to be the first number of, so when you caucus, you go, you stand in different groups, and then for your candidate. And if your group doesn't have 15% of the total of people who've gathered to caucus, then you're not viable and you have to realign. So that first number was just going to be the first count of people standing in groups. The second number was going to be the number after the realignment.
So after that 15% threshold is applied.
Yes, after that 15% threshold is applied. And so some groups like Yang or, the one person for Tom Steyer in my precinct or whomever would have to go to a different group. And so that second count would be that count with people in their different groups. And then the third count is how those counts go to delegates. So there's kind of some complicated math that portioned off, so the numbers of people in the groups and how that meant with the delegate count. So, for example, in my precinct, we had, 67 people for Bernie. We had 50 for Warren. Klobuchar barely met the viability count with 37. So did Biden, barely made it as well. And then Pete Buttigieg had quite a few, and we had five delegates to assign. And with the math, that meant that everybody got one.
Does it seem the Iowa Democratic Party was trying to do too much here? Was this getting too complicated?
Absolutely. I think the problem with the caucus is that it was designed to be exclusionary by nature. Early caucuses in the 1850s were basically just meetings people would set up real fast to appoint delegates. And they wanted to do it in a way so that people couldn't come, so that they couldn't get delegates for their own candidate. I mean, it was a bad, corrupt system then, but that's how it evolved. It started out as this kind of secretive, exclusionary thing, and it's just continued to evolve that way. And the party tried really hard to make it open and accessible, especially coming out of 2016 when there were a lot of confusion out of our caucus system. but we just weren't able to do it because, you know, adding new rules, adding in these preference cards just took what was already confusing and exclusionary and just added, you know, just dumped some gasoline on that and lit it all on fire.
We're talking with Liz Lenz. She is a columnist for the Gazette newspaper in Cedar Rapids, and we're recapping her experience last night taking part in the Iowa caucuses. What are your thoughts on the delay and the problems in Iowa this morning? How badly do you think these issues in Iowa will impact the Democrats? How late did you stay up waiting for results? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Liz, you alluded to this, but there were a number of new caucus rules set in place this year. What were these rules and where did they come in at which point?
Well, the rules have been in the process for a while now because a couple of things is coming out of 2016, there were a lot of questions and a lot of confusion about how delegates got appointed. You know, some people were saying, well, maybe Bernie Sanders had, quote unquote, won the popular vote, but didn't win the delegate count, you know, kind of the electoral college thing all over again. So the party really tried hard to put into place counting mechanisms. So that's where some of the new math for deciding delegates came, because in a lot of places in 2016, between two hotly contested candidates, that came out to a coin flip. The party wanted to do a little better because, as you can imagine, as a candidate, you don't want your chances to come down to a coin flip.
Right. You've been campaigning in Iowa all year long, and this can't come down to a coin flip.
No, it shouldn't come down to a coin flip at all. But, you know, like you heard out of my precinct, we had five really strong groups and five delegates to a point. So it worked out with the math, but you can imagine if we'd had one less delegate to a point, how that math would have worked out. It would have been a nightmare, and I think it was in a lot of precincts. So that was the genesis for some of the rules, and they've been in the process for a while. Another new rule was having satellite caucus locations, and that's been in the process for many, many years, not just out of 2016. They were kind of tested in 2016 and then rolled out in full force.
Glasgow, Scotland, yeah. Paris, another satellite spot, Milwaukee in the mix as well.
Yes, yes. You know, we need to get all of our Iowans in Wisconsin a chance to be enfranchised. Yes, and there were lots at nursing homes and colleges. There were a couple that happened earlier in the day so people could attend. I think the hope with those was that it helped give voice to more people, but you know, that just didn't happen. Early numbers for voter participation saw that we are about on level with 2016 numbers, which was about 15% of registered voters in the state participated. So this is not a lot of people participating in this, and yet it's still frustrating.
Well, let's take a call now. Jonathan in Madison is with us. Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm an Iowa native, but I live in Wisconsin now, and I've been through a couple caucuses in my life, and I was a precinct co-captain for one of them. And I think there's a lot of cool things about the caucus and having people in your community come around and talk about their candidate and kind of encourage others to come to their side if they're not viable. But I haven't seen, you know, the turnout numbers recently, so this is just kind of a theory. But from what I hear from family and everything who are still there, it seems like voter turnout is on the rise and definitely was last time. And in my opinion, I think having more people there complicates the process even more. And so I'm starting to wonder if Iowa is kind of growing out of the caucus format just because more people have taken interest in voting.
Jonathan, thank you for those insights. So Jonathan saw the caucuses been part of once where it was more about community and camaraderie, and now they're getting really big, Liz.
Well, we're not seeing that played out in the numbers. The voter turnout was 15% this time around. That's what it was like in 2016. The biggest caucus turnout we had was in 2008 with just over 16%. So I'm not sure if it's exactly becoming as big as we actually want it. We want it to be more open. We want it to be more accessible, and it just is failing to do that. And yes, turnout can be big at some precincts, and what happens then with the new rules is it just becomes harder and harder to control a room full of 300 people where you have to hand them each a ballot or a presidential preference card. We can't call it a ballot. New Hampshire gets really mad about that. you know, you have to hand them a card. You have to do complicated math, you know, in a room full of 300 people. And that's what I think we're seeing in this cycle, is these new rules really hampering what was coming out of the caucuses. Also, there was supposed to be a smartphone app that was supposed to make reporting easier, and the app just did not work at all. So people were trying to call in the results, and the results weren't being, and they were being put on hold for a really long time. So I think it's less about who shows up and more about how this process was managed.
It's Morning After the Iowa Caucuses with Liz Lenz as our guide. She's a columnist for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids. What were some of the things you were watching for last night? How do you feel about the results not coming in? What confuses you about the process? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Liz Lenz here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about last night's Iowa caucuses. The state's Democrats, they gathered in rooms across the state and remotely in satellite locations in far-flung cities like Paris and Glasgow, Scotland, signaling their support for the candidates hoping to face President Trump in November. The results did not come in as expected. There is hand-checking results today. There was trouble with the app rollout. What do you think about these hiccups? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Liz Lenz stays with us. She's an opinion writer for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids. Let's bring in another call now. Dwayne is joining us from Wausau. Hi, Dwayne.
Oh, good morning. You know, this, the last thing they needed was this to happen, you know, putting fuel on the fire for you know, Trump is already on the line saying this is going to be a big victory for him. But I caucused three times in Iowa back in the 90s and back when President Obama was. And it is kind of cool, but it's a big time grab. You're there all night. It's not private. I mean, you're all in a corner, and then if your candidate isn't viable or gets a certain percent, then you're cajoled into going to some other candidate. And, you know, it's, I can see them not letting Iowa, the DNC, be first anymore, or maybe even them going to a primary in the future. Hmm. I just, you know, it's just, it's a debacle, and it's a shame it happened.
Dwayne, thank you. Yeah, thank you for those thoughts. Liz, what might be the reaction from the DNC here?
Well, I think your caller is hitting on something correct here. It's that in this cycle, Iowa was particularly fighting for its relevance. We heard Julian Castro criticize the caucus process. I think everyone was trying really hard to answer the question, why does Iowa get to go first? And I don't think we answered it very well. And I know there's a lot of concern that maybe we won't have our first in this nation status anymore, because the kind of deal is we were supposed to be this first in the nation caucus, which just happened by accident. And then New Hampshire is the first in the nation primary. And I think that's one of the reasons Iowa hasn't been fully able to change, because if we become a primary, then we upset New Hampshire's first in the nation primary status. So that's always been this kind of really tense push and pull that's made Iowa incapable of changing in some of the ways we need to change. So now that this has been an entire mess, what do we do? I think people here are really concerned we might lose our caucuses. But, you know, there are some people here also saying, well, if that means the process is more democratic, then take it, because we need more democracy here in America. But as far as, you know, what happens with the president's rhetoric, I think that in some ways, you know, he was going to criticize this no matter what happened. And you know, now he'll, you know, just do what he does best.
A number of the Democratic candidates, former Vice President Joe Biden, Senators Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, all gave speeches last night that seemed to proclaim or at least hint at their victory. Many of the candidates have now left for New Hampshire. Here's former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg feeling that victory.
By all indications, we are going on to New Hampshire victorious.
And then here's Senator Bernie Sanders' optimism at the podium last night.
I imagine, have a strong feeling that at some point the results will be announced. And when those results are announced, I have a good feeling we're going to be doing very, very well here in Iowa.
So, Liz, what should we take away from the speeches last night?
Well, when there's no winners, everybody can claim victory. I think that they gave speeches to fire up their base and move on to New Hampshire. These candidates don't have much time to sit around and tally presidential preference cards. They want to keep some forward momentum. They want to go, and they're out now. They're on the East Coast. Getting this, you know, next part of the process off. So I think their speeches were just trying to keep up that momentum there. And, you know, and again, it's easy to claim victory when there isn't a clear winner. I think it's also probably safe to say that when the results do come out, there will be three different ways for three different people to claim some sort of victory. So they might not even have to, you know, finesse their victory speeches. You know, Klobuchar might be able to say, oh, well, I did better than I expected. You know, Sanders can say, oh, look, it's neck and neck with Elizabeth Warren. And Pete felt really confident. I'm not sure exactly what he knows that the rest of us don't. But, you know, but there we go. No winners. Everybody claims victory. We move on to New Hampshire.
Liz Lenz, a columnist for the Gazette newspaper in Cedar Rapids, is our guide as we recap the Iowa caucuses from last night. Still awaiting results, expected sometime today. Let's take Tom now in Cedarburg with thoughts on Iowa last night. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and I'm glad to see you're doing some political shows. I think it's about time that that Wisconsin and other states have a chance to be first, and that the states rotate through who would be the first state to be counted. And I think that Iowa has been the first for way too long, and you can see that by the policies that these people who are now president have pushed through, like alcohol, all this beef.
So, Tom, who should be first in your mind? What state should be first?
How about Wisconsin?
How about Wisconsin? All right, Liz. You know, Tom is saying that Iowa should no longer be the first state here.
Well, if it was Wisconsin, I'm sure the candidates would really enjoy some good beer and cheese curds.
fair enough. Fair.
Not to pander. But, there is discussion, right, of why Iowa, why anybody? And the answer is, who knows? Democracy is a mess, and it's complicated. And it can certainly change, and I think it will change going forward. But which state? I don't know. It's hard to say. Maybe no state should go first. Maybe we should just do a nationwide primary you know, that happens in the spring or even earlier, so that, you know, this presidential race doesn't keep going forever.
Well, when you look demographically, though, Iowa isn't much like the rest of the country. Des Moines, the largest city with a population of just 217,000, residents are more than 90% white. How can we apply Iowa's results to the rest of the nation?
Well, that's another thing. Iowa hasn't ever been particularly good at picking the president. Democratic-wise, yes, we're okay there mostly. Obama came out of Iowa, and I think that's one of the things that people point to when they say, but look, you know, a small candidate with not a lot of name recognition came to Iowa, won, and America got its first black president. But I don't think, you know, the Obama reason justifies what we're seeing right now in 2020. So, yeah, I mean, we haven't ever been particularly good at picking the president. And I think people are losing on the answers as to why Iowa first. So somebody else take it next. I've heard a lot of talk about how Illinois demographically and racially is more reflective of the rest of the nation. So, you know, maybe them. But there is a concern, though, that you'd want to pick a place where retail politics were important, where you couldn't just go in, do a big ad buy, and have that be the way that you win. Because I think one of the reasons Iowa's been able to hang on to this for so long is that we can say you can be small, you don't have a lot of money, and you can come out of Iowa a winner. But I think that's less and less proving to be not quite as true.
Liz, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Liz Lenz is a columnist and opinion writer for the Gazette newspaper in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. She was at her local high school caucus. She's been describing the process and her feelings about this political tradition. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.